2 days and one helpful fire department to get Miss Post and her companions unstuck. 48 hours in which the writer found the Hub City to be the sweetest, cleanest, newest little town imaginable. And she compared the Collier Inn, where she and her group stayed for the 2 days, to the Ritz Hotel in New York. Heading into Rochelle on Lincoln Highway, the farmland gives way to more industrial concerns. Research stations and distribution centers fill the landscape. The Lincoln Highway takes a strange turn in the center of the downtown at the corner of Lincoln Highway and Lincoln Avenue. It's reminiscent of where Route 66 turns toward California and crosses itself, making the notorious intersection of Route 66 and Route 66 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Here at Rochelle's Lincoln and Lincoln sits a former visitor center converted from an old Standard Oil gas station.
My name is Ross Fryer. I'm the director of Rochelle Tourism. The property was bought by the Standard Oil Company of Indiana and built in 1918. And from what we understand, it was the very first filling station of its kind along the Lincoln Highway in the state of Illinois.
And how long was it a functioning service
station? We're not really sure on the number of years that it was a service station, but since the time it stopped as a service station, it was like a taxi service.
Really?
It was a barber shop a couple of times. Then it sat empty for a while. And in 2001, the city purchased the property and got a grant through the state of Illinois, along with some private funding here in Rochelle, to completely restore the filling station as it was, the facade of the filling station, not the interior, but
right,
the outside.
Fryer says the center gets lots of visitors, including tour buses. Recently, an employee of BP, which bought Standard Oil, stopped by.
He came through a few years ago and was looking at this place and told us that he thought that it was the best restoration of this type of filling station that he'd ever seen.
So how far would I have to go to find another similar filling station to this one?
I have no clue.
I've never seen one like this.
My family and I took a vacation on Route 66
just
about 3 years ago. And I saw several filling stations, but I never came across one that looked like this, with
right,
the particular canopy that it has and the brick driveway from both sides of the streets and both on the corner like this one is.
Do people come and we've talked to some people who are traveling Lincoln Highway and are...
We get a lot of motorists that are traveling, and this year being the 100th anniversary, there'll probably be a lot of that.
Yeah.
Where motorists are traveling in the classic cars, they'll stop by and want to pull in and take their picture the driveway.
You let them do that?
Yeah, we do let them do that. We just ask that they not stay too long because we don't want oil, because old cars like to leak oil a lot, that we don't want oil all over the brick. And a lot of them will bring their own piece of cardboard or something to slide under while they're doing it. But yeah, we undo the chains at the ends and let them come in and take pictures. We've had people that have come here who produce calendars. We'll just say they're of lovely ladies next to cars.
Outside the visitor center, I found 4 commemorative cement posts standing at the intersection, looking something like oversized rooks on a chessboard, each with a Lincoln medallion and a blue directional arrow. I took pictures in front of them before ambling over to one of the saloons across the street to fortify myself for the next leg of the journey.
You can hear all of the parts of our series on the Lincoln Highway at will.illinois.edu. Join us again tomorrow for part 3. This is WYLL. Now, American cities are kind of designed by accident in a way. There are lots of historical mistakes that lead to the way that they're laid out. For example, if you think about Los Angeles's car culture, well, it wasn't really designed that way. Now the city is in the midst of a massive rail construction project, and the hope is that one day Angelenos may take the train and walk around rather than depend so fully on their cars. But a change on that level means more than just laying down some track. Here's a story from reporter Alex Schmidt from NPR.
It's the end of the workday at the La Cienega station on the new Expo Light Rail line. This route runs halfway across the city from downtown, and in the next couple of years, it'll go all the way to the beach. Mariko Dawson-Zaire is proving the L.A. stereotype wrong. She takes the Expo line to get to and from work. But there's just one catch. To get from the train to her house, she drives.
I live near here, but first thing in the morning, to walk here, it's a little tricky. So I leave my car here during the day.
Dawson-Zaire's house is about a mile away from the station, and with two kids, the time it would take to walk is just too much to spare.
I know 15 minutes isn't much, but in my life, 15 minutes is a lot. In the mornings, anyway.
It's that last leg of the trip, between trains and homes, that city planners are focusing on. How?
The development around the transit stations, if all goes according to plan, would be very mixed use.
Patricia Diefendurfer is one of the planners working on the project to rezone land around several transit stations. Mixed-use development is all about fitting more things into a smaller space. Apartments, stores, restaurants, people.
More and more people could walk around the city to basic services like restaurants, retail, shopping.
The magic number planners are looking at around transit stations is 10 minutes. That's the amount of time people will walk to trains or buses before they decide the car is a better option. But if you live in a single-family home in the path of that rezoning project, real estate developers may have an eye on your home. One of those neighborhoods is full of quiet streets and small homes, just around the corner from a future Expo Line stop.
It is kind of a nice place to live. It's easy access to the freeway, to the beach.
Diane Lamont's neat house is right in the target area for potential rezoning, and that has her worried.
But if it's going to be encroaching where you can't see around you big, tall buildings, and that could be a problem.
Lots of people live in L.A. because they can have a single-family home lifestyle in a city. Jen Giuliano is a professor of public policy at the University of Southern California. She says some people may move to preserve that lifestyle rather than adapt to density.
People have options. We don't have borders around metropolitan areas to keep people here.
L.A. covers a sprawling area, and there's still a lot more space to expand. But sprawl and long commutes drive other people to dense living. Above this restaurant in the downtown Culver City neighborhood is a stylish mixed-use apartment building. It's about a half mile from an Expo Line stop, and there's a strip of shops just outside the building's front door. This is precisely what city planners hope to create more of in L.A. Jennifer Yee lives here and enjoys taking the Expo Line.
I mean, it's definitely something that L.A. is lacking, is mass transit that's convenient. So it would be great if, you know, things develop around this Expo Line as it goes farther west.
It could take a generation or more for single-family home neighborhoods to transform into something like this mixed-use area. But the long view is exactly what L.A. planners are taking. Transit construction projects here could stretch into the middle of the century. For NPR News, I'm Alex Schmidt.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Trophy Time in Champaign. Trophy Time features a variety of advertising items, name badges, plaques, and trophies. They can also design and create unique awards for any occasion. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. More information is available at 351-7958.
California farmers take the promises of immigration reform with a grain of salt.
It'll help us in the short term. The long term remains to be seen.
Migration patterns are changing, and many farmers have seen reform before.
We thought we solved it in 1986, right? And here we are again.
A future farm labor shortage later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 30th of April, 2013. It was on this date, 1859, Charles Dickens's A Tale of Two Cities was first published. It came out in serial form in a new weekly magazine all the year round, which Dickens himself had founded, and A Tale of Two Cities was on the front page of the first issue. Thanks to his popularity, the first issue sold 125,000 copies. The magazine was successful from the start. Dickens's investment paid off, and he serialized Great Expectations in the magazine 1 year later. A Tale of Two Cities, which begins, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We had everything before us, we had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven, we were all going direct the other way." It's the birthday of Annie Dillard, born in Pittsburgh, 1945. She wrote her master's thesis on Thoreau's Walden. Then she moved to a cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains and kept a daily journal of her observations of nature, her thoughts about religion, wrote in old notebooks and on 4x6-inch index cards. And her book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, published in 1974, won the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction. She was only 29 years old. Her most recent work is a novel, The May Trees. And it was on this date in 1952 Anne Frank's diary was first published in English, Diary of a Young Girl. Came out in Dutch, 1947, under the title The Secret Annex. Anne Frank died of typhus in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp about 2 weeks before the camps were liberated in 1945. After the war, her father, Otto Frank, was given the diary. He wasn't able to read it for a while. It was too painful. But when he did, he saw that his daughter meant for the diary to be published. There were two versions of the diary, the A version, made up of journal entries, and the B version, rewritten by Anne herself. Her father edited the two together. He left out 5 pages of her original A version, pages in which she described the progress of her sexual development and ranted about her mother. Those pages were restored in the definitive edition, which was published in 1995. Here's a poem for today by Robert Graves, A Slice of Wedding Cake. Why have such scores of lovely gifted girls married impossible men? Simple self-sacrifice may be ruled out, and missionary endeavor 9 times out of 10. Repeat, impossible men, not merely rustic, foul-tempered, or depraved, dramatic foils chosen to show the world how well women behave and always have behaved. Impossible men, idle, illiterate, self-pitying, dirty, sly, for whose appearance